So thank you again for all being here. This is great. Circle's too big, we can't see, but it's wonderful to have everyone here. So. So as Pam indicated, this is the third talk in a series on the 10 ox herding pictures, which are a series of pictures that were developed in Soto Zen in China to give a pictorial description of the spiritual path, the path of that our meditation practice takes. Before I go any further, I think we should go around and introduce ourselves, just say our names because there are some new people here. So, Kim? Oh, yes. I'll start. I'm Reverend Vivian. I always forget myself, so I'm Reverend Vivian.
Kim.
Cassian.
Alexandra.
Pam.
Alice.
Christine.
Iprep.
Kara.
Corrine.
Andrea.
Achudi.
Paul.
Roger.
Jim.
Jeannie.
Sandy.
Sue.
Carter.
Thank you. So the 10 ox herding pictures, the first talk was on all 10. The last talk was on 8 and 9. And tonight we're going to talk about number 10. But just to recapitulate, we've got this fellow out here wandering around in the wilderness looking for something and not knowing quite where he's going. And here, he sees the footprints of an ox. So he's seeing the traces of what it is that he's looking for. In this picture, he catches a glimpse of the ox. In this picture, he catches the ox. He tames the ox. He rides the ox home. So this is a process of, well, you could, to say it very briefly, of discovering how unruly our minds are and learning to tame them through our meditation practice. Or going out on the spiritual search and being confronted by brambles and thickets and mountains and rivers and being lost and cold. But gradually, you know, putting in a great deal of effort, but gradually coming to a place of ease and peace in our practice, riding the ox home. The ox is tame. We're playing a flute. Everything's neat, you know, cool. He gets home and the ox disappears. In this picture, ox and the man, the person, disappear. So this is empty circle. This is the point of non-duality. And within non-duality, all things appear. So this is just a landscape, but it's indicating everything appears in the fullness of emptiness. The 10th picture is returning to the marketplace with bliss bestowing hands. That's the title for that picture. And, you know, I just realized that I've skipped something I wanted to say but from the last time. So let's take a little break here and back up a minute. I had wanted to, last time when we were talking about these two pictures, we were talking about Kensho and Satori, religious experience, that kind of thing. And I wanted to say a couple things about that that I either missed or want to add on. One is that Roger used the word insight. You know, sometimes we have an insight, and that can be a kind of religious experience. We're talking about a kind of insight that isn't just the words and the intellect, but a seeing, you know, into the reality of things. Seeing something, seeing some aspect of the truth. So I thought that was a good word to add to our collection of words for describing this kind of experience. So that was one thing. The second thing I wanted to say about religious experience is that, this is really important, and I apologize for leaving it out. All beings are religious beings. In the same way that we have bodies and intellects and emotions and psyches and all these other parts of ourselves, we also have a religious aspect. Now, somebody said, saying that we're religious beings isn't all that helpful because a lot of us trip on that word religious. You know, the institutionalized religion that was problematic for us at some point in our life. So it occurred to me that maybe mystical was a word we could use instead of religious. We're all mystical beings. We all have, Reverend Master G would say it as everyone has an intuitive knowledge of unborn Buddha nature. we all have this intuitive knowledge that, of this mystical aspect of existence. It's within us. And some of us are more pragmatic, down to earth, and others are more up in the sky, but there's an element of this in all of us somewhere. And I think it's really important to know that and to remember it. And we could call these opening experiences. I actually kind of like that word, opening experience, something that opens us up. There's something about space and openness that's almost a definition of the mystical or the religious, if I can put it that way. So that gives us some concrete access to it, I think. Now, the last thing I want to say about this is if you take this kind of experience, particularly if it's a little bit woo-woo, you know, kind of not according to our normal everyday stuff, to a teacher, they can tend to dismiss it. And that can be because they don't want you to get too fascinated by it. But the difficulty that that presents is then we fail to make use of the teaching that's in it and the help that the experience can give us. So it occurs to me that one way to approach a teacher with something like this, you know, describe the experience and then say something, ask something like, how can I use the teaching in this experience to help and support my training? And that might be a way to approach a teacher about these kinds of experiences that will get a response that goes deeper than, don't worry about it. Okay, so that was all fast, but I hope it's a little bit helpful to clarify or deepen what we said last week. Okay, so back to the 10th picture, which is titled either In the World or Entering the City with Bliss-Bestowing Hands, Entering the Marketplace with Helping or Extended Hands, Returning to the World with Bliss-Bestowing Hands. So there's this image of returning to the city, the town, the marketplace with helping hands. And what we see in this picture, in the landscape, this is the first picture. It's the last picture of the series and the first in which there's two beings. And the fellow who started out, the person who started out, has been transformed into this big, fat, happy, hobo-like person with a big sack on his back. And he's known in legend as Hote, and he goes around, you know, spreading good cheer to beings and handing them toys from his sack, you know, a prototype for Santa Claus. And the other person is, you know, a new person coming to him for help. And maybe then he'll start his spiritual journey and go around the circle. So part of what's happened here is the person has made their spiritual journey, gone through the cataclysm, you know, of non-duality and deep religious understanding, and come out transformed into Hote. So that's one way that you can see this. But the real point of it, and actually there is a version of 10 pictures which stops here with this one, the empty circle. And I think what's really important about this set of the 10 is that you can't stop here. You can't stop with, you know, being in the cave in bliss. You have to, or, you know, being off in a corner by yourself, sitting in ecstasy. You have to come back to the world and live in the world. Live our ordinary, everyday, daily lives with our families, our work, our shopping, our insurance, our hassles, you know, our animals, whatever it is, our children that are driving us crazy, our parents we have to care for while they die, whatever it is, we have to come back and live in the world in that way. We can't just stay all happy by ourselves. Okay? So what this picture is about, and here's the other version of it. And I've lined this other version up along the what's it here, whatever you call this?
The
but so this is the black and white line drawing of it, for those of you who can see. So this picture is about the teachings of the Buddha manifesting in the world to benefit all beings. We've got that second person there. So this is, we return to the marketplace in order to use, make use of, practice the teachings of the Buddha to benefit all beings. I think of this picture. Have you ever heard of that famous Zen saying, "Everyday mind is the way"? To me, this picture illustrates that. Everyday life is the way. The way with a capital W. There's text, for those of you who are here for the first time, there are texts that go with these pictures, short verses. One of the verses for these pictures says, "Entering the marketplace barefoot and unadorned." This is an image for ordinariness. So Hote looks kind of fancy here, but I've seen another set of pictures. Actually, it's a little different than this. It's a set of pictures of the spiritual journey from China, and there's 21 pictures. And in the last one, the fellow looks the same as he did when he started out. And there's teaching in that, and I think we'll come back to that, because that's really, Hote looks kind of fancy here, but he's barefoot and unadorned, an image of ordinariness. So we come back, we look quite ordinary. "Blissfully smiling, though covered with dust and ragged of cloths." This indicates that we possess nothing. So we've gone through the great search and we've come back empty-handed. Sometimes we can speak of this picture in terms of enlightened duality. So we talked here about enlightened non-duality, or non-duality being the position of enlightenment, right? Come back to the world, we've got to deal with duality. We have to deal with the opposites, with self and other. But we're now enlightened, right? We now have some new way of perceiving it that helps us to work within it more freely and easily. Okay, so we're not talking about necessarily mega enlightenment here, but those little insights that clarify things for us. So instead of disappearing from daily life, we actually become one with daily life and enter into it fully and completely without reservation and without holding anything back. And there's no distinction here between monks and laity. On the one hand, I could say, well, this is your picture, you know, returning to the marketplace, while I go sit off in the monastery. But in fact, in the monastery, we have to do the same thing. It takes a different form, but we too, you know, need to bring the teachings of the Buddha into the world to help beings. So in some ways, it's the same project. Okay, so some of the teachings of this picture. First of all, this is the picture which expresses the Bodhisattva vow. The Bodhisattva vow in Buddhism is the vow to work towards Buddhahood in order to bring all beings to Buddhahood, not just oneself. Or to do our practice and training in order to help self and others. Okay, so that's the Bodhisattva vow, and this, you can see how this picture would be an expression of that vow. The reality that we live with others and we want to all come together towards enlightenment. And this is the expression of great compassion. Okay, so if this is about wisdom, we express compassion here in how we help other beings. At the same time, there's the recognition. This is the paradox that comes up constantly as we move along the path, that we can't help other beings, and in a sense, if we have any sense of helping, we're already deluded. Okay. Okay, so the Bodhisattva vow. Secondly, this being is invisible. I don't mean literally invisible. Like, we can all see each other, but, and here he comes out looking like Hote, who's all fancy, And Hote, by the way, is a form of Maitreya, the incoming future Buddha. So this fellow is actually a Buddha, okay? But in fact, when we return to the marketplace, when we step back into the world from our meditation cushion, you can put it that way. You know, we sit down in the morning when we, in the monastery, the first thing we do is we meditate, and then we move into our daily life. So you can think of the meditation cushion as this spiritual journey, and then we step off of it into our daily life. Obviously, we can see ourselves in each other, but what's invisible is this transformation that we've been through. Okay? So the enlightened being doesn't show him or herself as enlightened. They just look like an ordinary person. The verse says, inside my gate, 1,000 sages do not know me. The beauty of my garden is invisible. So we give no hint of what we know. Or as it's sometimes put, there's no stink of enlightenment. If you say that you're enlightened, you're not. Right. So if some teacher comes along and says, I'm enlightened, you should listen to me, be suspicious. Check that person out. Okay? no one knows that Hote is Maitreya. They just think he's a dusty old ragged bum wandering around with a sack. They don't recognize him as a Buddha. Now, another teaching of this picture is that all things can be used to help sentient beings on the path to enlightenment. And all things and all beings teach. Okay? So, if the enlightened being or the person who's been through this spiritual journey in one way or another is living in the world, we're not going to necessarily recognize them as such. The verse says, I visit the wine shop and the market, and everyone I look upon becomes enlightened. He is found in company with wine bibbers and butchers, and he and they are all converted into Buddhas. Okay, so what's interesting about this is, first of all, you don't know what form the teacher is going to take. It's said that Kanzeon, who's the bodhisattva of compassion, appears in whatever form is necessary to help beings. So there are stories in Buddhist lore of prostitutes teaching, not overtly, you know, not sitting around giving a profound Dharma talk, but teaching or helping out of their great, as manifestations of compassion. So out of their great compassion, anyone can be a teacher. So you never know who it's going to be, right? And the other aspect of it, you know, it says, he and they are all converted into Buddhas. So even though we may not recognize the Buddha that's sitting in front of us, yet that Buddha is enlightening beings. So it's a little bit of the, I don't know, what's the right analogy? Something like a candle flame that lights the next candle and that lights the next candle, or if you know, a light that's shining shines everywhere. It doesn't just keep to itself. So though the enlightenment of that we bring back into the world is invisible, it still makes a difference. It has an impact on those around us. And others will pick that up. And so there's a kind of invisible ripple effect, okay, that carries through. There's a lovely story that I won't tell very well because I'm really bad at remembering stories. But it's a story about a Eastern Orthodox monastery in Algeria or somewhere over there. And it was failing. You know, like many monasteries today, everybody was getting really old and no new people were coming. And this is true in Buddhism, it's true in Catholicism. Nobody wants to be a monk anymore. So anyway, the monastery is failing. Everybody's in their 90s. It looks like it's going to all die off. And the abbot decides to go visit an elder, a sage, living alone in the desert, a hermit in the desert, who's known to be very wise, and ask him what he can do to save his monastery, what they should be doing differently. And the hermit said, you know, I don't know what you should be doing differently, but I do know that one of you is Christ, the Christ who is to come. So the abbot goes back to the monastery and tells his monks this. You know, he didn't know what we should do, but one of us is the Christ who is to come. So the effect this has is that they're all wondering, well, who is it? You know, is it him? Boy, you know, and so there's the one that really drives them nuts, you know, and they think, oh, but what if he's Christ? You know, I better be nice to him. So they start being nice to each other. They begin treating each other, you know, everybody else like Christ, because they're not sure which one it is that's Christ. And what happens is that the monastery becomes filled with so much love and joy that everybody's drawn to it. And so people come and people become monks, and the monastery becomes this thriving community. Anyway, I think that's relevant. I'm not sure how. If we all thought of each other as invisible Buddhas, would it make a difference in how we treat each other and respond to each other? And that difference would actually enlighten all of us, wouldn't it? Self and other. Anyway, okay. So one of the other verses that goes with this says, now before me the dead trees become alive. So in a way, that verse just describes in effect what we just talked about. Yeah? Okay. Our light illuminates, you know, that which is around us. Our inner radiance can bring hope to darkness and despair. And I think it's important not to forget that, because we can actually cultivate that inner radiance. By the way, we can do this just by being present. I think the greatest gift we can give another person is our presence, our attention, being present with attention and awareness. Yeah, that's all it takes. Really simple, really hard to do. So when we do this, the marketplace or the world or whatever you want to call it, wherever it is that we live, you can live in the country, it's okay, you don't have to all move to the city, is transformed into the pure land. You know, in Buddhism we use this term pure land to describe heavenly realms, you know, where everything's lovely. So this world becomes the pure land, or we could say this world becomes nirvana, which is, you know, what the third noble truth promises. That there's an end to suffering, and that end to suffering is nirvana, and it exists, okay? So this world, just as it is the pure land. I'm swiping from the verses now, okay? This world, just as it is the pure land. We, just as we are Buddhas, and then we help others to realize this. And that's the teaching of the 10 ox herding pictures. Okay. Now, the last thing, though, is that in spite of all that, we still have to continue to do the work. We still have to continue to meditate, to work on ourselves, to follow the precepts, develop the paramitas. The paramitas are, I'm not sure I'll get all six of them because my mind always spaces them, but there's six paramitas which are qualities we want to develop. Generosity, morality, which is keeping the precepts. Patience, diligence or effort or aliveness in our training, meditation and wisdom. Okay, so those kinds of things that we know about as part of our practice, we have to continue to do them. We don't get to just sort of rest on our laurels and kick back in the bar and drink beer and assume everybody's getting enlightened all around us. So, always returning to beginner's mind, always returning to our practice and training, always going on. Going on, going on, always becoming Buddha. Okay? Now, there's one other image. I hesitate to bring this up, but there's an image that is in the introduction to the Yamada Mumon commentary on the Ten Oxen Herding Pictures that I found really stunning. And it's the image of the empty mirror. The mirror is often used as a metaphor for the mind of meditation. The mind of meditation is like a mirror that simply reflects what's going on, what's going by, without holding on to it. A mirror doesn't try to keep an image. You know, if Kim walks in front of the mirror sees Kim, and then he moves and Cassian walks in front of the mirror sees Cassian, and it doesn't say, "Come back, Kim, come back, I wanted you," or, you know what I mean. Okay, so that's a lovely metaphor for the meditative mind. The empty mirror is the idea of, you know, is the expression of emptiness. When we recognize that nothing has a solid self that we can hold on to. Okay, so the empty mirror is a metaphor for that understanding. Okay, and in the introduction he said, when a Zen master meets a Zen master, it's an empty mirror reflecting an empty mirror. And I find this to be a really stunning image. You know, there's that expression, enlightened action leaves no wake. And I think there's a relationship between that expression and the two empty mirrors reflecting each other. You know, enlightened action leaves no wake means that we're not causing a lot of ripples behind us of difficulty, consternation, suffering, trouble. And we're not being full of self and drawing attention to ourself. You know, when we're selfing, to use Kim's word, we create a lot of negative, or not necessarily negative always, but ripples, you know, that have an impact, that in effect leave a karmic wake. And when our actions become enlightened or are infused with, you know, some kind of understanding, that wake that we leave behind us settles down. It's less extreme, it's less turbulent. You know, the ocean, the surface of the ocean becomes calmer. And there's something just really lovely to me about empty mirror reflecting empty mirror. When we're, and you know, this doesn't have to be about master to master or super enlightened Buddha to super enlightened Buddha, but when we're just present to each other and just aware of each other, and we don't put any of our stuff in there, that's what we've got. And I think that reflects this 10th picture. I'll stop. Thank you all for listening.